Council meeting last night. Always a good time to talk to the mayor the following morning. You know, that's kind of how we plan this. And Mayor Tobies joins us this morning. How you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. How are you, Greg?
Good. Pretty busy meeting last night.
Yeah, we had a good amount of stuff going on. We did move forward with the application for up to $3 million of a forgivable loan from the state of Michigan to pay for our lead service line replacement. So that was good. It took a couple of public hearings and solicitation of feedback, but that'll help pay down the total cost to replace all the 11,000 plus lead service lines in the city. And we estimate that's about $120 million. So, you know, $3 million of forgivable loans from the state won't pay all of that, but it'll go far towards helping us to kind of get the process started early and find even more ways to reduce costs. So that was one of the big things.
I mean, that's,
you know, kind of boring, but big things coming out of last night.
Sounds like a no-brainer, but was everybody behind this?
Yeah, that passed 7-0. You know, we worked with a consultant to pay to help process that grant, but it's something that we were eligible to from the state. So yeah, kind of no brainer. And you know, in a time when we have to unfortunately had to increase some of the rates to keep up with the infrastructure needs of our water and wastewater utility, we and the unfunded mandate coming from the state, you know, this is gonna, that $3 million is going to help, but, we'll find more ways to further reduce those costs for the residents and the payers into that utility.
I guess the big deal last night was the three ordinance changes, the rental inspection program, that those always can turn entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. So we did, we did move the registration and certification period from a 2-year process to a 3-year process because, mm-hmm. you know, when we put the non-owner occupied residential property registry and the vacant foreclosed and abandoned property registries into effect back in 2012, we've gone through a number of different, 2-year cycles that have started to weed out some of the bad actors, started to clean up our neighborhood, neighborhoods, started to ensure that we're having safer, more affordable, more dignified housing for the tenants that we have here. And what we've seen is a lot of the good actors that are picking up more of those properties, a lot of more of the good landlords that are making more investments in the city that are taking care of their properties. And, we want to, one, reward good behavior, give people a little bit more time in between their registrations and their inspections. So that's why we're moving to a 3-year cycle. That'll also help us deal. And, we also plan to move forward with a flat fee, which will help us in our billing, help us with invoicing in advance, which will help us with some of the costs that we sometimes can't recover because people don't pay their bills. But overall, I think moving to a 3-year cycle is going to be great for the landlord community. We're also further make some changes. We're going to be exempting those that are providing housing to their parents, to their children, to their siblings, exemption from the non-owner occupied property registry so that they're not having to register those properties and pay for the inspections when they're kind of within the family. So I think that was also widely supported, kind of some common sense reforms to that policy that mm-hmm. went into effect for final passage last night.
How would you describe a bad actor? Are they simply property owners that just, really don't care? They just want to get as much money out of a property as they can?
I think there's probably a variety of ways, but I think most people driving through the neighborhoods looking at some of those properties can probably pick them out just from the street.
Yeah.
You know, others skirt corners kind of on the inside of the house where we have, you know, people that just neglect the house and cause unsafe living conditions to the extent that, frankly, we've had to vacate some houses because of how dangerous they've been, either, you know, hanging electrical lines in the bathrooms or, you know, furnaces installed the wrong way. They're blowing a harmful CO2 into the buildings, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's just, it is dangerous for the tenants to live there. So I'm sure that the inspection program has actually saved lives in its process over the last decade. And, you know, I think that a number of those individuals that were interested in just kind of buying a property, renting it out as much as they could without making any investments in it and kind of just allowing that property to deteriorate until it is unusable anymore and then moving on to the next property. Those people we're weeding those people out of the neighborhoods because we, in addition to understanding that, you know, we have a role to play in protecting the health, safety, and well-being of the tenants in those units, we also have a role to play in protecting the property values of the surrounding neighborhoods. And when we have people that aren't investing in those properties, you know, and they're conducting businesses in those neighborhoods without investing in those units and allowing them to deteriorate, that deteriorates the property value of the surrounding neighborhoods. And that's something that that neighbors can't afford and the city can't afford.
You also, of course, the city is a property owner, and you sold some properties, and you have sold quite a few over the past several years.
Yeah, just in the past year, we've sold about 50. You know, we had a this is kind of getting to a change in strategy from the city. Back in when I first started, we had a kind of strategy of, you know, realizing that we had a oversupply of vacant and dilapidated housing, and to kind of right size our housing supply and start to increase the demand and therefore increase the value, we had to get rid of some of that property that was not only tilting that market, but also just becoming a blight in the neighborhood. So with some of the demolition funds that we've prioritized, with some of the help from the federal government through the H4HH funds, we've been able to remove about 2,000 dilapidated vacant structures from the city. A number of those have, you know, ultimately become vacant lots, and we've gone in and removed the basements and made those properties redevelopment ready and free from contamination to the extent possible. So, you know, now in some of those lots we've kept for strategic value, but over the last couple of years we've started to really increase our sale of those properties. One, to put them back onto the property rolls, get them to adjacent landowners so that they can improve their properties, maybe add a garage, add some green space, so on and so forth. And also to reduce the costs of mowing that the taxpayers are doing through the use of city funds. So I think overall, you know, over the last 10 years that it's been had a positive effect. Now we're at a stage where, you know, we're lessening our demolitions. We're selling off some of the properties that we do have to put them back on the tax rolls, and some of the other properties that we have one of which we sold last night, they're going to be rehabbed. they're actually houses that we acquired that are going to be rehabbed. Another one just recently that we did, we sold to Habitat for Humanity, that they're going to be rebuilding. So, you know, I think we're now in a phase of, now that we've reduced a lot of that blight, coming back into the neighborhoods, getting rid of some of the vacant parcels to put those back on the rolls, and also taking some of the properties with some homes that are eligible for rehab and making sure that they're brought up to code and safe and affordable places for families to move into.
Those are pretty big commitments, aren't they? Because those are major rehabs.
Yeah, they're major rehabs, but I mean, the market is hot right now, and you know, for someone to get a home for fairly cheap and to put, you know, $100,000 into it, it's a lot cheaper than building new. And so I think that's what we're seeing. And you know, houses are come on the market for a day and are going off a day later. So, you know, I think to take a house that needs a significant amount of rehab in a nice neighborhood is a no-brainer for a number of different families that are interested in moving into the city.
Looks like what most of the downtown events will be coming back this summer.
Yep. Most of the downtown events are coming back. And one of my favorites, the Art, Beer, and Wine Festival, is also coming back. That was on the consent calendar last night. And it's great. Great to see some of those events coming back. Great to see the weather starting to break and getting a little warmed up. We actually joined some of the members from the community last Friday in hoisting the Pride flag in downtown Jackson in celebration of Pride Month, and took them over to the Grand River Brewery for a drink afterwards. And it was, you know, it was jam packed full. I think people kind of hit the June 1st deadline and came out, and it was full. It was good to see people out, and good to kind of reconnect with some old familiar faces that, you know, you haven't seen in a long time. So I think that's going to be kind of the standard throughout the rest of summer. People will be out reconnecting, you know, hopefully people are getting vaccinated and able to come out and enjoy some of the events that we have across the city this summer.
You need one of those honey flavored throat lozenges.
I did a lot of talking last night at the council meeting, so I blame council.
Well, we appreciate like everybody else. Appreciate you for stopping by this morning.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Derek. Jackson Mayor Derek Dobie's post-council session.